The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
He's known as the Sage from South Central. Larry Elder has hosted the longest-running afternoon drive-time radio show in Los Angeles, having started back in March of 1994. And you hear him each weeknight right here on 94.5 The Answer from 6 until 9 p.m. It's an honor to have Larry join us for a few minutes this morning on The Morning Answer. Welcome in. How are you, sir?
Joey, thank you so much for taking the time. I really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you, because and I want to be sure that our listeners understand this. It's kind of early for you. You're out on the West Coast, and this is live, folks. When I asked Larry to come on for a few minutes, I said, look, we can record this, and he wanted no part of this because he wanted all of you in upstate South Carolina, western North Carolina, and northeast Georgia to know how important this is to him. Thank you, Larry, for waking up early.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It really is.
Yeah. In a minute, we're going to talk about your book, A Lot Like Me, A Father and Son's Journey to Reconciliation. But before we go there, just quickly, you wrote an article a week or so ago titled Democrats 2020, The Grievance Party. You wrote, and I'm reading from it, by identity politics, Democrats really mean grievances. The party leaders pushed a narrative that blacks, Hispanics, gays, etc., are victims, whether due inequality or sexism or racism or otherism. Tell us about that. What did you mean by that, Larry?
Well, what I mean is that the Democratic Party, it really isn't a collection of values. It's not a collection of principles. It's a collection of people that are angry at this, that, or the other, that believe that the forces conspire against them and hold them back. A principal example is this idea that Obama pushed every single year that women make 77 cents or 80 cents, depending upon the survey, on the dollar compared to men for doing the very same work. Joey, if that were true, if you're an employer and you have a bunch of men and you have a bunch of women willing to work for less money, you can pay them less and they'll be equally productive, you would fire all the men, hire women, and pocket the difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yet this is a lie that the Democrats keep peddling. Another one is that blacks are subjected to institutional racism. It is simply not true. The Washington Post looked at about 1,000 people who were killed by the police in a recent year. 250 of them were black. 500 of them were white. There were about 14 or 15 black men who were unarmed who were killed by the police. And by the way, unarmed does not mean not dangerous. Michael Brown was not armed, but he was dangerous. His DNA was found on the officer's gun. But there were 21 unarmed whites who were killed. I defy your audience to name one. And that's my point. If a black person gets killed, especially by a white cop, in comes Anderson Cooper, in comes Van Jones, in comes Chris Cuomo. But if a black guy gets killed by another black guy in Chicago, as happened over this last weekend, I think we're 52 people shot in Chicago, about 5 or 6 killed, nobody cares. It is simply not true that blacks are under siege. But the Democrats have convinced blacks that they're victims, which is why they're now pandering and talking about reparations. So the Democrats are a collection of people that are aggrieved about this, about that, about the other, as opposed to the Republican Party that believes in the principle of hard work, accountability, and personal responsibility.
Yeah. You know, since you mentioned that, I love to watch PragerU videos, and I happened to catch one of you recently with Candace Owens, and you talked about the myth of police brutality and black men, and you talked about, you said that these black men are more likely to be hit by lightning.
Well, that's right. I think one recent year there were 300 people that were injured by lightning. And lightning, of course, does not injure you demographically equally, but assuming it did, black men are about roughly 3% or so of this population. That means around 21 black men would be injured by lightning in any given year. So you're more likely to be injured by lightning than to be an unarmed black man killed by the police. It is a lie. And in fact, a young black man is 7 or 8 times more likely to be murdered than a young white man, and the young black man will more likely be murdered by another young black man.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on here. And the problem is the lack of fathers in the home, Joey. Around 70% of black kids today are raised, are brought into the world without a father. And forget about Larry Elder and all the other conservatives. Let's talk about what Barack Obama said about a kid raised without a father. Obama said a kid raised without a father is 5 times more likely to be poor, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, 20 times more likely to end up in jail. We ought to be talking about what's happened to the American family in general, what's happened to the black family in particular.
Let's talk about your book, Larry. With me this morning, Larry Elder. His book, A Lot Like Me, A Father and Son's Journey to Reconciliation. Larry, you write, I hated my father. Really, really hated him. I hated working for him, and I hated being around him. I hated it when he walked through the front door at home, and we feared him from the moment he pulled up in front of the house in his car. Now, wow, these are pretty strong words about someone's dad.
Well, they are, Joey, and I've got two brothers, and believe me, we all felt the same way. The only reason I thought my dad wasn't a criminal is because my mom married him, and I love my mom, and I knew that that there must be something redeeming in him, otherwise she wouldn't have married him. But aside from that, I did not like him. He would come home, he would whip us with the belt. That was his job. My dad would come in the house, my mother would lay out all the things my brothers and I had done wrong, and my dad would get the belt, and he'd wail against us for this, that, and the other. And I thought it was excessive. Now, fast forward, I start working for him. He started a little cafe. I hated working for him because when things would go wrong, he would blow up. And Joey, you're talking about a little diner here, so people could hear your old man yell at you. And it was embarrassing. Now, I'm 15 years old. I love to tell your audience, I decided that next time my dad yells at me, I'm going to say, see here, pal, you and me, mano a mano, let's have a talk about this. But I was afraid of my father.
Sure.
So my act of defiance was simply to walk out of the restaurant. It was a full restaurant. My dad yelled at me. I walked out. No one had ever defied my father like that. He came home. He was furious. He said, why did you leave? And I said, for the first time in an act of defiance to my father, I got sick and tired of the way you spoke to me. My dad reached into his pocket, pulled out the $10 a day that he paid me, balled it up, threw it at me as I lay on my bed. He walked out of the bedroom, and my dad and I did not speak to each other, Joey, for 10 years.
Wow.
When I say didn't speak to each other, I don't mean, how about those Rams? Do you think it's going to rain? I mean nothing.
10 years.
Avoid him because he worked late. I graduated from high school. Then I went to college in the East Coast, law school in the Midwest. And I would come home, of course, to visit my parents. But I would make sure that whenever I was in the house, Dad wasn't there. This went on for 10 years. Now, I'm 25 years old. I just got a major job with a major law firm in Cleveland, Ohio. I passed the California bar, the Ohio bar. I should be living large, but I can't sleep. And I know it has something to do with my dad. Not that I ever thought we'd be friends, but I called my secretary and I said, cancel all my appointments. I'm flying to L.A. I'm going to be there for a day or two, and I'm going to come right back. I didn't tell my parents I was coming because I didn't want my dad to prepare for this meeting.
Sure.
So I walk into the restaurant. My dad was surprised to see me, of course. I had two big bags. He said, shall I put your bags in the back? Larry said, no, Dad. I'm going to be here 5 or 10 minutes. I want to tell you something. He said, okay, wait till we close. So I sat for an hour, and I said, now, Larry, don't tee off on the man. When he sits down, just tell him a few things. He's going to call you an ungrateful son. You can call him an SOB. At least maybe you'll be able to sleep. So the man sat down, Joey, and I teed off for half hour. I told him everything he ever did, every slight, every spanking, everything. After a half hour, I was out of ammo. And my dad looked at me and he said, is that it? You didn't speak to me for 10 years because of that?
Wow.
And I said, yeah. He said, let me tell you about my father. Now, I got to pause, Joey. I knew nothing about my dad's life other than I met his mom once. I knew he had no brothers and sisters. I knew he had no relatives because we never got any gifts. Outside of that, I knew nothing about him and didn't care. I didn't even like him. So my dad told me about his life over an 8-hour period of time as we sat there in these two stools.
8 hours.
Eight hours. For the first time I saw my father cry, he said, Larry, you know your last name, Elder? I said, yeah. He said, that's not my father's name. I said, what? What is your father's name? He said, I have no idea. You never met him? Never met my biological father. Who's Elder? Elder was some man who was in my life the longest, maybe 4 years. Alcoholic, was physically abusive to me and to my mother. And when I was 13 years old, I came home and I started quarreling with my mom's then boyfriend. Elder was long gone. My mom sided with the boyfriend, threw me out of the house. My dad said, never to return. 13-year-old black boy, Jim Crow South, Athens, Georgia, at the beginning of the Great Depression, never to return home.
Wow.
I said, what did you do, Dad? He said, I walked down the street. I got any job I could. Ultimately, I got a job as a Pullman porter on the trains. He was able to travel all around the country, which was eye-opening for a black boy from the South, and came to L.A. one time and thought it was sunny. People seemed less racist, more friendly, and my dad made a mental note, maybe I'll relocate to L.A. someday. Pearl Harbor, my dad joined the Marines. I said, Dad, why the Marines? He said, two reasons. They go where the action is. That's what I wanted. And second, I love those uniforms. When Dad became a Marine, stationed on Guam, the bombs fell. My dad returned to the South, Chattanooga, where he had met and married my mom, to get him a job as a cook. My dad was a staff sergeant in the Marines. He cooked for all the black soldiers. So he could make anything. He could look at a cake, tell you what's in it, Joey. So he goes to the South, works all around, tried to get a job as a short order cook, and he's told we don't hire any N-words.
Wow. On the 94.5 The Answer guest line with me this morning, Larry Elder. You can hear Larry 6 until 9 each evening here on 94.5 The Answer. So Larry, I remember that there was some connection with your family with Athens, Georgia. So your dad left Athens, moved west, joined the Marines. Take it from there.
Well, and then after he got out of the Marines, he went back to Chattanooga, where he met and married my mom, to get him a job as a short order cook because he had cooked in the military. And he goes to restaurant, and they tell him, we don't hire N-words. He goes to an unemployment office. The lady says, you went through the wrong door. My dad goes out to the hall, sees colored only, goes through that door to the very same lady who sent him out. My dad came home to my mother and said, this is BS. I'm going to L.A. where I had been, and I'm going to get me a job as a cook, and I'll send for you. So my dad comes out here, walks out to L.A., walks around for 2 or 3 days, and nobody will hire him because they say, quote, you have no references, close quote.
Wow.
My dad said, I'll work for free. Just give me a reference. They wouldn't even do that. He was treated the same way in L.A. as he was in Chattanooga. They were just a little more polite about it. He goes to an unemployment office, this time just one door, takes the first job he can get, which is cleaning toilets. He did that for 10 years at a company called Nabisco Brand Breads, took a second job at another bread company called Barbara Ann Bread, also cleaning toilets, cooked for a family on the weekends to make additional money, and went to night school 2 or 3 nights a week to get his GED. Joey, the man never slept. So you average a couple of hours a day, not day after day, week after week, month after month, but year after year.
You're going to be a little grumpy. You're going to be a little grumpy, Larry. Yes.
Walk into a house with 3 boys running around, see what kind of mood you're in.
Yeah.
So my father got bigger and bigger and bigger as he was telling me this. I got smaller and smaller and smaller. After 8 hours, boy, I'm crying. And I said, Dad, I am so sorry I judge you so harshly. And my dad said, Larry, don't be. Just follow the instructions I've always given you and your brothers. Hard work wins. You get out of life what you put into it. Larry, you cannot control the outcome, but you are 100% in control of the effort. And before you whine about what somebody did to you or said to you, go to the nearest mirror, look at it, and say, what could I have done to change the outcome? And finally, no matter how good you are, how hard you work, sooner or later, bad things will happen. And how you respond to those bad things will tell your mother and me if we raised a man.
Yep. Wow. Hey, Larry, I'm getting a text message. Steve in Shelby, North Carolina says, thanks a lot, Larry. You painted such an excellent picture of your childhood that I had to pull over, wipe my eyes so I could see the road. I still don't talk to my dad. It's a little bit different, but thanks for sharing your story. That's the whole thing with your book, A Lot Like Me, A Father and Son's Journey to Reconciliation. I'm sure you hear stories all around the country as you travel around and speak to a lot of different groups of people reading your book, and it kind of leads them to make that first step to reconcile with their family.
Absolutely. That was the whole point of the book, and there's nothing you can do to reach out while the old man is dead. I was fortunate enough to reconcile with him when I was 25 years old. We had 35 wonderful years together. Arguably, he and I became even closer than my mom and I. My mom and I are very, very close. So people have told me, because of your book, I reached out, and he wasn't the guy I thought he was, or he had changed, or
True.
I had changed.
Yeah.
We both had changed.
Yeah. Yep, yep. Larry Elder with me. Hey, Larry, I hadn't talked with you about this beforehand, but I'd love to get you a copy of your book and get you to sign it for one of our listeners for me to give away this morning. Would you do that that for me?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So here's what we're going to do, folks. Text Larry. Just text Larry to 877-235-9405, and we'll choose one of you to be a lucky winner of a copy of a signed copy of Larry's book. We have a couple of minutes left, Larry. So, you know, there's a lot of discussion these days about race relations, and we talked about that a little earlier. I really remember I was in the third grade here in upstate South Carolina when the first black boy came into my third grade class, and I'm ashamed of how the teacher treated him. He and I became friends, and we were friends until we were separated when we went to separate high schools and all. But I'm all, we've reconnected since then, by the way, and we remain friends. But I'm also, I ask the question, we talk so much about race relations. What's the answer, Larry?
Well, the answer is that this is the best country in all of human history. It's a ethnically diverse country. We get along better here than people get along in other countries. And racism is no longer a significant problem in America. I mean, I saw a poll. Republicans were asked, how many of you would never vote for a black person, no matter how qualified he or she is? I think 2% said that. Yeah. They wouldn't. And Democrats, the same thing. You asked the same question in the 1950s. The numbers of people, white people who said they'd vote for a black president, were in the single digits. Fast forward, Obama gets elected and reelected, and we're talking about reparations? Are you kidding me? Most people, when they pulled the lever for Barack Obama, thought we were putting this thing to bed. And I'm not saying things are perfect. They'll never be perfect. Sure. 330 million Americans, you're going to find some idiots. 8% of Americans, Joey, believe Elvis is still alive. 4% believe if you send him a letter, he'll get it. Yeah. There are morons in the country. Yeah. We're never going to have Nirvana, but we're getting along, I think, as well as could be humanly expected in America in 2019.
And we just keep trying. Larry Elder, thank you again. Hey, and Larry, my text line here is like a slot machine. Everybody wants this copy of your book, A Lot Like Me, A Father and Son's Journey to Reconciliation. Have a wonderful day. Thank you again for getting up so early and joining the Morning Answer.
My pleasure, Joey. Anytime.
Sure thing. Larry Elder. And you can hear him tonight, 6 until 9 a.m. here on 94.5 The Answer. If you'd like to read a copy of his book, he's going to send us a signed copy of A Lot Like Me, A Father and Son's Journey to Reconciliation. It's a powerful story, folks. Just text Larry to 877-235-9405. Larry to our Big Rock text line. Glad to have you along. Up next, The Mike Gallagher Show. Dennis Prager, Sean Hannity, and Larry Elder, 6 until 9. Till
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.